Joining me on the virtual couch today is Professor Julia Sloth-Nielsen, who is Chair in Public Law at the University of the Western Cape. She's recently been recognized as an A-rated researcher by the National Research Foundation, making her the first female academic ever to achieve this at UWC. The professor has a particular interest in children's rights, and in addition to her position at UWC, she holds the Chair of Children's Rights in the Developing World at the Child Law Department at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands. She's contributed to a number of international panels and committees on children's rights. She was one of the drafters of our own Children's Act here in South Africa, and has also contributed to law reform in a number of our neighboring countries in Southern and Eastern Africa. So somebody whose influence and input into the issues of child law in particular is felt all over the continent and beyond. Professor, lovely to have you with us on Cape Talk this afternoon, and congratulations on the A rating. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Pippa. I have to say I'm extremely delighted, and UWC has been also very, very supportive in my efforts.
I know UWC are absolutely thrilled at this recognition, because it really is obviously a pat on the back for them to have somebody with that level of acclaim on their staff. Can you, for those who don't really know much about the academic environment and the research framework, could you just explain how significant this A rating is and what it actually recognizes?
Well, there is various levels of rating that in the system run by the National Research Foundation, which is part of our Department of Science and Technology. And the A rating is the pinnacle of this. Obviously, it's a pyramid system, so there are more rated researchers at the C level and fewer at the B level and very few at the A level. In fact, I believe there are only four A rated researchers in law currently in the whole country. And wow. I'm one of them.
That must feel pretty special, and it is pretty special to be in such company. In reading all the accolades and the responses from your campus colleagues and others in the legal field, one of the things many of them referenced, Julia, was that apart from the skill and the importance and the reach of your research in your field, you're known for taking a very keen interest in your students and their overall well-being, that it's not just about getting the results and getting the PhDs recognized, but that you really try to hold their hands and help them and interact with them on a personal level. I would imagine that's been particularly strain-filled in the year that we've just had.
It has been difficult but not impossible. We have all these new means of communication, Zoom and Skype and so forth. And I'm proud to say that I graduated three PhDs last year, two at UWC. One is a Zimbabwean and one is an Ethiopian. Mm-hmm. And I graduated one at the University of Leiden. She's actually working in Zimbabwe at the moment. And any number of master's students. And one of my master's students in the Netherlands won the thesis prize for the best thesis in children's rights in the country, wow, which I was very proud of. It was actually an outstanding thesis on climate change and children's rights. So I learned a lot about climate change too.
I love to hear that kind of enthusiasm for exposure to new ideas through your own mentorship. If we bring it back to children's rights here in South Africa, I have to ask about the current status of children's rights. And you, as one of the drafters of the Children's Act, will be acutely aware of the fact that what the Act promises in terms of children's rights to well-being is not always what is delivered. And particularly in the strange circumstances we find ourselves in now, the right to education, obviously very badly affected by COVID-19 and lockdowns. I'm curious how you feel about the news that the reopening of the school year has been further delayed.
Well, I've thought about this a lot myself. I have many colleagues who are schooling their own children at home, both here and in the Netherlands, under very difficult circumstances. And as a teacher at a university where we have very disadvantaged students, many of whom do not have access to devices or data, it's been a very difficult year at the tertiary level of education as well. I think that we are all going to have to reimagine and revisit our approach to children's rights in the post-COVID era. I'm working on a paper on that with one of my master's students, actually, mm-hmm, for the International Journal on Children's Rights, looking specifically at the Global South rather than the Global North, where I think that there are more resources available to help children cope with the psychological issues, with the nutritional issues, with the educational issues. But having said that, we've also had some remarkable legal decisions during lockdown from our courts in Gauteng in particular, which reinforced the importance of having children's rights enshrined in the Constitution. For instance, the decision about children's rights to nutrition, mm-hmm. even when schools are closed, because of the devastating impact that lack of nutrition has on their development and indeed their learning. So one of the objectives of the article I'm writing at the moment will be to lay out the minimum measures that governments in the Global South, particularly Africa, should adopt in the case of pandemics and emergencies, because this is not the first time. Mm-hmm. There's been the Ebola crisis in West Africa and indeed also in Central Africa, and we can expect that there will be pandemics of this kind in the future too, and one needs to look at the minimum package of responses that governments should maintain in order not to breach children's rights.
Mm. It's fascinating that, because as you mentioned, a lot of these issues have had to go to court to get action on them. I was talking yesterday to the Center for Early Childhood Development, and they reminded us that ECD centers just fell through the cracks last year, that it took court action to force government to allow them to reopen. And, you know, the physical impact, the safety issues, the nutritional impact on kids affected by that were massive. It shouldn't take somebody going to court to enforce these rights in a perfect society. But of course, with so many competing needs for the money and focus areas, this is what happens. Julie, I mean, the current situation has obviously shone, as you've already referenced, a glaring spotlight on the inequalities in our education system. You must have a very sharp focus on that, working as you do between two vastly differently resourced institutions. And so many of our under-resourced schools in particular, if you look at what the Children's Act and our Bill of Rights guarantees in terms of children rights or promises, they're falling so short. You look at mud schools and pit latrines and you go, how can that possibly stack up with a child's right to have their dignity protected and their access to education? I mean, how do you deal with those vast inequalities in a situation now where the budget is already under siege? We hear the president telling us there's just not enough money to pay for business relief and vaccines, let alone to intervene in the inequalities that the situation has thrown into such sharp relief. Where do you even start?
Well, I'm not an economist, but there's been a lot of work done initially at the national level, less now, I think, but also at the international level, on how governments should prioritize spending in order to not let it be that there is regression in the implementation of children's rights. This is not the first time there's been a crisis. There was a crisis of 2007 where one saw even wealthier countries like Greece having to impose austerity measures, and there is now guidance on the international level on how that should be effected so as not to prejudice the ultimate fulfillment of children's rights, and how it should be justified when there is a need to take retrogressive measures. I think that's why one of my responses is also that what this epidemic has thrown sharply into relief is the difficulties around coordination between government departments that have some responsibility for children's rights. And one's talking here about the Department of Social, in our country, it's different in every country, Department of Social Development, the Department of Basic Education, the Department of Health, and how there really is a need to strengthen coordination mechanisms so that everybody's not just doing their own thing, and so that an integrated package of services, which is also what the Constitution promises, is in fact delivered to children. You've mentioned education particularly, but I would also like to highlight, not just in this country, but in many of our African neighbors, the devastating impact that COVID has had upon the incidence of violence against children.
Yeah.
Being forced to stay at home, girl children particularly not being in a safe space at school, and being exposed to domestic violence. We don't have solid figures yet, but the indications are everywhere that violence against children has increased in various ways. And I think for South Africans experiencing that pandemic, this also needs to be an area of very sharp focus.
We're talking to Professor Julia Sloth-Nielsen, who is Chair in Public Law at the University of the Western Cape, as well as Chair of Children's Rights in the Developing World at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, and has just received her A rating as a researcher from the National Research Foundation, one of only four in the legal field in South Africa at the moment. Another area where I would imagine the impact of lockdown is being felt in terms of the sort of knock-on impact on children's rights is when it comes to maintenance. Julia, my email box is unfortunately frequently the recipient of mails from usually mothers saying, I don't know what else to do. My partner, my former partner, is not paying maintenance or has short paid. I've tried going to court. I've got nowhere. I received one yesterday from somebody who has just, the father has moved overseas and washed his hands of all financial responsibility, and she's left with two children to care for. I'm acutely aware, as I say that it's not always a case of men shirking their responsibilities. I would imagine there are many families right now whose financial circumstances have changed dramatically because of lockdown affecting their income. Any comment on what is being seen at the level of that aspect of children's rights, the right to a roof over their head and food on the table and somebody caring for them and taking care of their financial needs?
Again, Papa, I think that this is an area that we as a country need to work on. There has been work done by the Department of Justice and many of the officials over the years, but it's also not enough. To try and strengthen the recovery of maintenance. As regards the recovery of maintenance from fathers who have disappeared abroad, there is also the potential of ratifying an international treaty in this regard, which would make it much easier for us as South Africans to recover maintenance. Uh-huh. It's a whole system that has been developed in The Hague since 2007. I've been encouraging our Department of Justice to look at ratifying that treaty on the recovery of maintenance abroad. And I think that much more work needs to be done, but we do have to remember that the justice system is severely compromised at the moment because of lockdowns and because of courts being sites of infection. And so services, have slowed dramatically. But, of course, it's very important for the government to have an effective recovery of maintenance system because it relieves pressure on the social security system, the grants that get paid out for child support and so forth. So this is really something that should not any longer be the Cinderella aspect of our justice system.
So that's fascinating. That treaty you referenced, you say you've been encouraging the Department of Justice to ratify it. Is there any hesitance about it? Is there a reason why that hasn't happened, or is it just a case of the wheels turning slowly?
I think it's a case of the wheels turning slowly, and I think it's a case that outside of Europe, it has not been widely ratified. Although, if I remember correctly, Lesotho has actually ratified it in Africa, which is probably a good idea because probably there are lots of people earning remittances in South Africa. And this, if we were to ratify, would make it much easier to recover some child support that is owing in Lesotho. So, I mean, these systems only work if everybody climbs into the party. So I do think it should happen. Apparently, there is need for some domestic law reform to facilitate this much more progressive system of recovery of maintenance, which is much more electronic. It doesn't depend on you having to notarize papers and give them to a pigeon and have them fly to the UK and deposited with the family court of the UK, etc., etc. So I do think it's something to look into.
Fascinating. Thank you. One for us to read up on. I've got a former UWC staffer on the line who would like to make a comment. Evadne and Belhar, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Pippa. Good afternoon, Prof. Prof might remember me. I managed the disability unit at UWC for many years.
I remember you well, Evadne. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Evadne.
Hi, Prof. Pippa, I just wanted to say that this award is greatly deserved by Prof. Sloth-Nielsen, because I had quite a lot of dealing with her, because many of my students did law, students with disabilities, and I always had a pleasure in accessing material for these students who needed, obviously, material in different formats. There was never, ever a problem with her cooperation to ensure that students were completely au fait and they had everything that they needed. So, Prof, congratulations. You deserve this award. You, in my eyes, you are an A1 lecturer.
Thank you so much, Evadne. That's very kind of you. And you were, of course, extremely caring towards your flock over the years.
She really was. Yeah. Prof, thanks. Yeah. Evadne, that's a lovely call to receive, and it's lovely to hear from you again. I know our listeners might recall we chatted to Evadne, I think it was at the time of her retirement from that post, about the incredible progress that had been made in terms of inclusivity for students with disability. And it's actually a subject we're picking up on the show tomorrow. So it's quite well timed that that call came through. Yeah, I mean, Prof, let's finish where we started with the news of the A rating. It's an achievement for you personally. It's obviously an accolade for UWC. The significance of the fact that you're the first female academic ever to achieve this at UWC, how much weight do you give to that?
Well, I have famously told my daughter this morning, and I've told her many times before, and my students in Zimbabwe, that I am not a feminist, but they don't agree. They dispute it. So I would prefer to be characterized as a really good researcher in my field rather than as a really good woman researcher, but I will accept that I am charting a path for other women as well.
Well, thank you very much for doing so, and thank you, I know, is a thank you due from all of the students over the years who have benefited from your mentorship in their own studies. It's, you know, one thing I've really enjoyed about this interview is hearing your excitement at the new work being done from the students under you. I love that sense of the learning process never stopping, the curiosity never stopping, even though you are the teacher role now, you still continue to be the student to this day. And to me, that's probably what has got you to recognition as an A-rated researcher. So congratulations on that achievement, and thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much, Pippa. Appreciate it.
Professor Julia Slough-Nielsen on the line there, Chair in Public Law at the University of the Western Cape, and just recognized by the National Research Foundation as an A-rated researcher. She also, of course, a reminder, has a role at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, where she holds the Chair of Children's Rights in the Developing World in their law department.